Hey folks, Brian Cook, your host here with a couple of words from our new sponsor, T-Fury. T-Fury is the original pop culture t-shirt destination, selling unique designs every day since 2008. You can snag their shirts for only 24 hours starting at midnight. Missing a shirt from the past and want to get it again? Head to T-Fury Gallery where you can buy some old designs still in print and vote on others to come back from the dead. Every 2 to 4 weeks, T-Fury adds more designs to their gallery, so be sure to keep an eye out for the return of your favorite shirts. T-Fury shirts cover all your favorite topics and fandoms. They've got everything from gaming, sci-fi, anime, TV, movies, pop culture, and more. Their t-shirts change daily, so check back as often as you'd like. Also, don't forget about the T-Fury After Hours sale. If you miss the day's shirts by only a little, they keep the sale going into the wee hours of the morning just for you. This December, T-Fury has some awesome shirts that'll make great gifts for the pop culture enthusiast in your life. So check out T-Fury.com and see what today's shirt is all about. T-Fury, wear your art on your sleeve.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 47 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. So I'm putting out two rounds today, recorded November 12th, 2013 in San Francisco, where you have three opportunities to catch competitive erotic fanfiction next week at Sketchfest. January 30th, 31st, and February 1st, three completely different shows. More details can be found at sfsketchfest.com. But here's round one, recorded at the Punchline the last time I was in town, featuring Nate O'Green, Bucky Sinister, Matt Lieb, Drennan Davis, and Claire O'Kane, reading pieces they wrote in advance based upon topics of their choosing. Please enjoy, and sorry about the low quality audio this week.
And please clap for your round one comic who's come with a prepared piece, starting with Mr. Matt Lieb.
Keep it going
for Matthew. All right. Am I standing here?
You're right there, buddy.
All right, let's do this.
Mine is historic. Entry from the diary of Thomas Watson, Boston, Massachusetts, March 10th, 1876. Today was a day like no other. I sit at my oaken desk, my quill trembling betwixt my fingers as I reflect upon the monumental events that have conspired today. Where to begin? As I was sitting at this very desk, staring, as I often do, at the seemingly useless box of wires and circuitry before me, I hear my beloved's voice beckoning me from the other room. Watson, come here. I want you. Oh, how I long to hear those words. Oh, how I long to hear, how I long to be wanted by my beloved friend and employer. Were he were only aware of what such a phrase could mean to me, he may have chosen his words more carefully. For all of his genius in the field of human communication, my love, Alexander Graham Bell, is remarkably deficient in the trenchant subtleties of language. Again he shouts, Watson, come here, I want you. But this time I realize the voice is not only coming from inside the study, but also coming from the seemingly useless box of wires and circuits in front of me. The device was working. I hearken unto him, sweat at my brow, both alarmed and aroused. I see his smile brimming with pride. My dear Watson, I have done it. After years of foil and folly, I've finally done it. I have invented the telephone. In our excitement, Alec and I embrace. His beard feels soft against my bare cheek. Still locked in a sweet embrace, he looks at me, mere inches away from my longing mouth, and says, this is it. Soon everyone will have a telephone. From this moment forward, the sounds of a ringing bell will be the precursor to the sounds of loving confabulation. And I couldn't have done it without you, my dear, dear Watson. My face blushed, libidinous, wine red, as we looked into each other's eyes with silent titillation. It was now or never. If I ever wanted to feel his soft lips against mine, this would be the time. And for the first time ever, I felt his body, his mind, his soul scream a silent, consensual whisper of, yes, Watson. Yes. We lean in, but suddenly a strange noise breaks our momentum. By some divine tragedy, the telephone was ringing. But how could it be? Who could it be? It was impossible. What the blazes? Alec, quickly turns away from our embrace and walks towards the cursed device. I told Alec this must be certainly some sort of malfunction, but he looked upon the phone with utter dread. He took a deep breath, then picked up the transmitter and spoke into it. Hello, Alexander Graham Bell speaking. A familiar voice boomed out of the transmitter.
Oh, hello, Alexander. This is an Antonio Meucci, the Italian man who actually invented the telephone. How do you like my design? It worked very good.
Meucci, how did you get this number?
I have my ways.
Embarrassment washed across the face of my beloved Alec. He was exposed right in front of me and not in the way I would have preferred. But I stood amazed at what was unfolding in front of me. Watson, could you please leave the room? I need to have a chat with Mrs. Meucci for a moment. I left the room stunned and confused. Could Meucci be telling the truth? How could Alec have stolen his design? Could there be some secret history with this man? I'll admit, my curiosity got the better of me. I ran to the desk where I first heard Alec beckoning me. I approached the dormant telephone, slowly picked up the receiver, and quietly listened in on their phone conversation.
Is he a god?
Yes, Meucci. He's in the other room. But keep your voice down. I don't want him to hear us.
Oh, so I take that to mean that you still haven't told him about the you and the me.
No, he doesn't know a thing. Antonio. My heart sank. He called him by his first name. He's never called me anything but Watson. Sometimes he just calls me, hey, you. I doubt if he even knows my first name. I feel jealous tears welling up in my eyes, and I let out a silent whimper. I continue to listen, heartbroken. Don't you go telling him, Antonio. I couldn't bear to see my dear Watson in pain. Makes me sick to my stomach the thought of hurting my dear Watson.
My dear Watson. What to make him so special, eh? Can he please you the way I please you?
Antonio, please.
No, get out of here. Be quiet. Does he touch you the way I touch you? Does he kiss you the way I kiss you? Does he lick your balls the way I lick your balls? Can he make you come less than 2 minutes? Tell me, Alec, can he do it minuti?
There was a strange silence on the line, then Alec finally spoke. Antonio, no one can lick my balls away. I had never heard Alec speak in such a way. As jealous as I was of this torrid affair, I was equally aroused by the subject matter. I began to feel the head of my engorged member pressing up against my zipper. Slowly, carefully, I began to unzip myself. My erect penis leapt from out of my trousers like a loose spring, and I immediately began to caress it with vigor.
That's right. I can make you come so good. You are like when I put your penny in my mouth. You are like when I sit on your penny.
Yes, Antonio. I like when you sit on my penny. God, I'm so hard right now.
Play with your penny. You and me, right now. Or we are gonna invent the phone sex. You want to meet? I'm making you a cum?
I can hear the sound of my beloved Alec breathing harder and faster, the faint sound of them pulling on his so-called beanie. I endeavor to match his speed. Yes, Antonio, I want you to make me cum. I want my cock in your mouth. I want you to slurp my cock like you're slurping up noodles.
That is a very racist. But it's 1876, so I forgive you, because I am your papa.
Oh, yes. You're my papa, Antonio.
Who is your papa?
You are my papa.
Who is your better?
You are.
Who is the true inventor of the telephone?
You are. I am one. You are the true inventor of the telephone.
Alec and I erupt simultaneously.
I came so hard, the sound of my sperm hitting the oaken desk may have actually been picked up on the transmitter. These things are hard to control whilst in the throes of orgasm. I tried desperately to dampen the sound of my breathing.
Did you come?
Yes, I did.
Like I said, do it minuti.
Yes, 2 minutes. You really have a gift. You really know how to
ring your bell. Yes. You're Alexander Graham Bell, you see what I did?
They both begin to laugh. I remain silent on the line. Well, I suppose that's one way to put it, Antonio. Well, I need to clean up. We can talk logistics of the patent for the telephone later. With that, Alexander Graham Bell hung up his telephone, the poached invention of a greater mind. I was going to hang up as well, but before I could cradle the receiver, Meucci said,
so did you like that, Thomas?
You knew I was on the line, I said to Meucci?
I did. I found it quite erotic. You know, Thomas, this is the first time we have spoken to each other.
I guess you're right. And then I said, to Mayuchi. Although then Mayuchi said something to me that's been stuck in my head ever since. Try as I might, I cannot get these hypnotic words out of my mind. This invasive melody keeps running through my thoughts. He said, Thomas, I just met you. And this is crazy. But here is my number. So call me maybe. One was his number. Thanks, guys.
Matt Lee. That's right, bro. Give it up for Bucky Sinister. I think my favorite part of this was printing it out at work.
And this is going to be the day that, it's up here, look at the fancy thing. This is going to be the day that the printer breaks or I send it to the wrong printer. Goes to my boss's printer and someone's like, who wrote this and what the fuck have you done with the Super Friends? Well, about to find out what I was afraid of my boss seeing.
It was a calm day at the Hall of Justice when Lex Luthor dropped an F-bomb. No, he didn't say the word fuck. It was an actual bomb filled with sex gas that made all of the Super Friends horny.
Holy bird fucker, Batman. Why are you fucking Hawkman up the ass?
Boy Wonder, it's not an ass. Hawkman has a cloaca. It's an orifice from which he shits, pisses, and lays eggs.
Gee whiz, Batman, you really give him his cloaca a pounding. Say, if he's a hawk man, would he lay eggs?
This is no time to judge Hawkman's gender confusion. Get to the Batmobile and retrieve some bat loop. Hawkman's cloaca feels like a wool sock. But on the way to the Batmobile, Robin is stopped by the Wonder Twins. Form of a bonobo ape, the horniest primate in the world. Shape of ice handcuffs. The Wonder Twins handcuff the boy Wonder to a radiator and rip off his green briefs. They would tear off his pants, but Batman's never given him any pants.
Holy rough trade, Wonder Twins! What are you two up to?
Busting your blue egg, Robin.
But the Joker already did that!
Don't make this weird, Robin. Meanwhile, aboard Wonder Woman's invisible plane, a red blur fucks her ferociously for 1.5 seconds and is finished. Wonder Woman is not pleased.
What the fuck? Are you done already?
It's how I got the name Flash. Wonder Woman takes out her golden lasso and ties it around the speedy red man. Tell the truth. I actually got my name by showing everyone in Metropolis my cock the same day. Well, Flash has some news for you. Your new superhero name is Gibbs Head until I say stop. Now get that tongue going. Meanwhile, Aquaman ran with a rage cock to Marine World Metropolis, where he summoned all the animals in the tank to service him. He fucked dolphins in their blowholes with octopus tentacles up his ass, lubed with the ink of squids, and with a starfish sucking on each one of his coral-hard nipples. He sodomized an electric eel and forced jellyfish to sting him all over, just so the trainers would be forced to finish off his ocean orgy by pissing all over him. And then he left for the ocean to fuck a sperm whale, just for the ironic value. Even Superman couldn't resist the powerful gas agent. He flew around the Earth looking for something that could take a fuck from his Kryptonian cock. He fucked the mouth of the Sphinx until it turned to sand. He fucked Old Faithful to the horror of campers. He fucked Teddy Roosevelt's ear on Mount Rushmore until his super cock came out the other ear. But still, he couldn't come. He fucked a volcano, a satellite, and an iceberg just to cool down. But still, he couldn't come. And then he heard Lois calling his name. Superman, Superman, Lois, I've never wanted to fuck you more, but it would literally destroy you.
But Superman, I had these made for the occasion.
Great Caesar's ghost. Are those what I think they are?
Yes. Kryptonite-laced condoms. With super speed, Superman puts on the condom and starts working the Daily Planet report as prime pussy. Faster, Superman.
Than a speeding bullet.
Harder, Superman.
Than the Hope Diamond.
Talk dirty, Superman.
Like Red Fox with Tourette syndrome.
This is a job for Superman, he cried, pulling out and coming majestically out Lois's window. Look, up in the sky. It's a white ropey bird. It's a wiggly pearlescent plane. No, it's a wad of super jizz. The jizz flew all the way back to the Hall of Justice, through the wall, through the walls of Wonder Woman's plane, which she deflected off her bracelets, while still getting speed limit head from the Flash, back out of the plane until it hit Lex Luthor, who became stuck in the ball of jizz. With Luthor defeated, the gas eventually dissipated, but things would never go back to normal, for as once they were super friends, now and forever they would be super friends with benefits.
Fucking sinister. Give it up for Clara Kane.
This one is called 1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock cop.
Nice.
Rock and roll, wholesome television, housewife culture, sock hops, ice cream, and greasers. What a great time to be alive, thought Richie Cunningham. While sitting at his favorite booth, in his favorite restaurant, Al's of course, with his two best pals, Ralph Mouth and Potsy. It doesn't get any better than this, Richie thought to himself. And right at that moment, Arthur Fonzarelli himself strolled in, wearing his signature leather jacket, and doing that thing he does with his thumbs all the time. No one knows the origin of the thumb pose. Just one more glorious thing that made Fonzie such a mysterious man, an enigma, a blue-collar hero of sorts. Had Billy Joel been around in the 50s, all of his songs would have been about Fonzie. Just to give you an idea of just how interesting this young man was. He sat down at the booth with the three pasty virgins. Richie instantly felt at ease, as he always did when Fonzie walked into the room, thumbs first. Little Richie C had always felt a little empty inside, much to his distress. As he was already living an ideal life, he had a great family, great friends, and to top it off, he was a man, a white one at that. He just couldn't figure out what was missing in his life. Maybe it was a sweet girl with a big set of bazoombas, or a nice sturdy Letterman jacket, or maybe even a baby blue T-bird. He had no clue, but he did know that whenever he was around the Fonz, he seemed to feel a little bit more complete. Hey, how was your date with Dee Dee Fellorio last night, Fonz? Asked Ralph Mouth, his red curls ablaze, as red as his lower lip as he bit deep into it, waiting to hear all the gory details of Fonzie's horny exploits. Fonzie smirked. I don't know if you deuce could handle it. Oh, come on, Fonz, you know we can handle it. Spill it, squealed Potsy, while stuffing his dumb fucking face with Al's famous chicken tots. Fonzie continued to smirk and began to look around the room, paying extra attention to the babes in the poodle skirts. He sits silent for a moment, then says, the funny thing is, the skirt's got a dog on it, but a pussy underneath. Fonzie's mouth hangs open for dramatic effect, and the boys are entranced, waiting for the next words to gently fall from Fonzie's Italian lips. Wet pussies. He finishes. Just like all the times Ralph Mouth had finished in his pants after catching a glance at Richie's mother's aged fun bags. Mouth and Potsy blush, but Richie suddenly becomes pale and starts to feel sick. What is this feeling bubbling up inside of him, he wonders. It feels like the first day of school and his first kiss all rolled into one. He sits quietly, hoping no one notices his inner turmoil. Just then, Fonzie pops up out of his seat, adjusts his patent leather jacket, and says, catch you boobs later. See ya, the boys say in unison. Then Fonzie winks and makes his way towards a bleach blonde basketball jock sitting at a booth by himself, drinking a Neapolitan milkshake. He nods at Fonzie, as if they have an unspoken agreement. And from afar, Richie reads Fonzie's lips as he says, "Come into my office." He and the young buck head for the men's bathroom, but before they reach the bathroom, Fonzie makes sure to turn to Richie and say, "Oh, and Richie, I have something I want to show you. Come down to my garage later. I think you're going to like it." Richie's eyes nearly burst out of his taupe head. Mouth and Potsy pat Richie on the back as if to say, "Yeah, Rich, you did it." Richie could not wait. Later that afternoon, Richie headed down to Fonzie's garage. Richie had never been to that part of town, but he knew from stories that it was known as the bad part of town, the part of Milwaukee no one wanted to be caught dead in. Richie even thought he might have seen a broken bottle or two on the street. Real tough stuff. He was nervous, but not because of his new surroundings. No, he was nervous to, for the first time, be alone with the Fonz. As he approached the garage, Richie made sure to even out any wrinkle in his khakis and smooth out any loose hairs atop his fleshy dome. He takes a deep breath, and just as he lifts his fist to knock on the heavy brown door, Fonzie swings it open. "Hey, Richie," Fonzie says, a huge smile on his face. "How did you..." Richie stammered, caught off guard by the intense smell of motor oil and department store cologne. "I could smell a virgin a mile away." Fonzie laughed and laughed as he pat Richie on the back, leaving his hand on the small of Richie's back to lead him into the garage. Richie cleared his throat and struggled to make small talk. "Oh, gee, this is a nice place you got here, Fonz." "Oh, nice place! Oh, what a goof I am," he thought to himself. Fonzie looked around the nearly empty garage. Yeah, I guess it's pretty damn nice if I do say so myself. Richie was caught off guard by Fonzie's blue language, but he had always been a bad boy. Richie noticed a makeshift room built in the back of the garage with a red light flooding from the crack between the door and the floor. Entranced, Richie walked towards it, pointing at it while whispering, "Hey, Fonz, what's that?" Fonzie's eyes lit up, and without speaking, he walks towards the door and opens it slowly, as if not to disturb whatever resides in that room. "Go on in." Richie shuffles into the room, giddy as a schoolboy. After every step, his pants become explainably tighter and tighter, unexplainably. He didn't notice his swollen crotch until Fonzie chuckled and pointed at it. Richie was so embarrassed. He didn't know what was happening to him, but he knew he liked the way it felt. No, loved the way it felt. "Just wait," Fonzie encouraged him. And then, yes. And as they walked deeper into the room, Richie began to see the outline of something glorious, something he had never seen before. And when he finally realized what it was, when he got close enough to touch it, he almost fainted. "I just put a bunch of fake dicks on my Harley." Richie saw just that. He couldn't breathe. His knob was about to burst through his favorite khakis, the ones his mother sewed his name into just the day before. He looked up at Fonzie's handsome, greasy face, and in that moment, he knew what he wanted, and Fonzie knew too. "Hey, Rich," Fonzie whispered. "Yeah, Fonz," Richie whispered back. Fonzie looked at the dick-covered bike and back at Richie. "Sit on it." Fonz motioned toward the bike with his head. But all this time, I thought you'd been railing all the Peggy Sue's and Susie Q's. Richie couldn't comprehend what he hoped what was about to happen. Fonzie smiled. "Nah, man, I'm gay." Richie immediately began unbuttoning his khakis. He relaxed his whole body as his pants fell softly to the cold ground, and he daintily slipped off his tidy whities, as he didn't want his mother to ask any questions about why there were grease stains on his hands. And as he mounted the big black fake dick where a seat once was, and as the dick slowly inserted into the tightest butthole in Milwaukee, Richie immediately splooshed all over the front wheel of the bike. Panicked, Richie looked at Fonzie, who was laughing so hard his tears streamed from his face, smudging the grease on his cheeks. I'm so, so sorry, Fonz. Just then, Fonzie put a finger to Richie's lips. Shh, don't worry about it, Richie. You can clean it up later. Fonzie unzipped his light blue Levi's and his engorged veiny member burst through the slit like a curious groundhog in February. How about we add a few more freckles to that face? He began to tug at his junk furiously, and Richie's face moved closer and closer to it. Fonzie, the snake charmer. Richie, the charmed. Hit me, Richie shrieked. Hit me like one of your jukeboxes. Turn me on, Fonz, turn me on, and let me come inside your office. Fonzie then began to smack his snake against Richie's flushed cheeks, leaving dick marks that wouldn't fade away for hours. After Fonzie sprayed his greaser seed all over Richie's peach fuzz, they both slumped to the floor, exhausted. As he breathed heavily, Fonzie turned to Richie and said, Rich, I want you to be the first to know. I'm jumping old man Thompson's shark tomorrow for the 4th of July celebration. Richie gasped. That's too dangerous, Fonzie. I don't want to see you hurt. Richie gently licked Fonzie's earlobe. Fonzie shivered, then shook it off immediately. It's already set up, Rich. I can't back down now. I'm going to jump that goddamn shark with my brand new Harley Dildoson. Richie understood, and they held each other sitting against the bike covered in dicks all night. Almost done. The next morning, the stage is set. Everyone in Milwaukee is there, surrounding the giant pool. Richie looked on nervously, but he knew Fonzie could do it. He just knew. Fonzie revved up the engine, and the crowd went wild. And before he took off, he turned to the crowd. Then he was off. And as he jumped the ramp, Richie could tell something was wrong. He wasn't going to make it. He was going to come up short. Richie covered his eyes and heard a loud splash. Fonzie had fallen into the pool with a shark. Joni screamed, Patsy fainted because of course. Mouth was too busy looking at Mrs. C's melons, and Chachi was nowhere to be found. And right when Richie lifted his hands from his face, he saw the shark jump out of the water, and there, shoved into its behind, was Fonzie on its dick bike. What a fuck machine, people whispered. I'll say, Richie said under his breath. He had never felt so happy for anyone in his life. He would never forget that day. Ever. Not much changed in that town after that day. Most people actually forgot about it, as other people began to jump and fuck sharks at least once a month for the next few years. Fonzie went on to become a Hollywood movie star with the likes of Marlon Brando, Rock Hudson, and Liberace. Mal finally got to third base with Mrs. C, but it wasn't what he expected. She would only let him kiss her neck, and she kept telling him to tuck his cork between his gams. The dum-dum known as Patsy died of unknown causes at the age of 25. The shark became the new manager of Al's restaurant. And as for Richie, well, no one really knows what happened to him after Fonzie jumped fucked the shark. Some say he moved to Green Bay and started a family. Some say he created a new type of wallpaper and became a millionaire. Others say they've seen him on the streets of San Francisco, where he got a sex change and became a stand-up comedian. Who knows? He could be here right now, even. Right in this very room. I'm Richie Cunningham. Bye!
Clara Payne. You go hit a three.
Very autumnal professorial sweater.
Oh yeah, I'm a fall. This was my wife's idea. The mother of my children thought of this. It was Andrew Wiggins' first day as leader of the Dragon Army Battle School. Boom! The alarm woke them at 5 a.m. and the dragons rushed to don their suits. They jogged in line through the chilly sloping space station corridors until arriving at the battle room. When Andrew saw the opposing army in formation around the floating tactical debris and the zero-gravity space conditions of the battle room, he knew they needed a new strategy, but what? We need to try something they would never think of. Andrew's friend Bean turned to him and said, "The enemy's gate is down." As 8-year-old Bean said these words, he licked his soft boy lips and placed a hand gently on Ender's inner thigh. As Dean slid his hand toward Ender's holstered blaster, Ender grinned with realization. We need to go down to win. On Ender's signal, all the boys in Dragon Army pulled out their tiny smooth members and began sucking each other off with the gusto of a cadet graduating to command school. Bean ended Ender while Ally gargled Dink's dick. Right at the moment of climax, the dragons launched themselves into the battle room. Six members of Dragon Army came at the same time, bursting semen into the battle room as they floated at the salamander. As Bean had learned from his brutal first 2 years of life on the mean streets of Rotterdam in the Netherlands, where he knew, like all Dutch boys, how to stick his finger in a dike. Zero gravity conditions of the battle room would spray their fresh dragon jizz across the chamber. The enemy army was disoriented and entranced by the drifting, floating globules of opaque, milky Boise. The dragon army soldiers who were not freshly spent fluffed each other's pink weapons to a preclimactic steel. They then fired their blasters at their own cocks, freezing them in saluting position. The dragons used each other's frozen erections as handles to hurl their fellow soldiers into the battle room in formation. Dragon Army's formations were so disciplined that the cum spread across the zero-G room in a twirling helix shape. Before the salamanders had a chance to shed their skins and respond in kind, the dragons had frozen them and crashed dick first through the enemy's gate, winning the battle. Later that night, Ender was showering off from the heat of combat. Salamander Commander Bonzo Madrid, known for his hot and generically Latin temper, appeared in the steamy tiled room. You cheated today. You're not supposed to bring a foreign object into battle room, Bonzo bellowed. How can a penis be a foreign object? Don't mock me, Wigan. I am Dandy once and for all. With that, Ender dropped his towel and rubbed his hairless, smooth skin to a soapy lather. He turned the heat in the showers all the way until his nipples glistened, rivulets of water running down between his slender thighs. Bonzo charged at Ender and swung at him. Ender slid out of Bonzo's reach. Bonzo grunted and turned to paw the ground like the enraged Toro that he was. His next charge pinned Ender against the sinks. Ender yanked down Bonzo's pants and shoved his soapy fist into Bonzo's butthole. Ender's tiny hand could fit easily into Bonzo past the wrist. Bonzo's eyes rolled back and he shuddered and blacked out. Ender gently kissed Bonzo's closed eyelids. He said to no one in particular, "When I understand my enemy well enough to defeat them, I can also make them come." This performance so impressed the commanders at battle school that they immediately brought Ender to command school to simulate battle with the bug-like alien Bete Noir. It turned out that all that fisting was not just a game. After destroying the Formic's home planet, Ender was consumed with guilt and regret. He knew he would shoulder responsibility for exterminating a species rather than the officer who created the game, deployed the armada, and gave the orders. Ender felt something calling him off the space station to a nearby hill of rubble. He crawled through an opening and into a small cave. Shadows flickered across the wall off the slivers of sunlight that reached down the entryway. He found one surviving Formic protecting a cocoon of one last queen. He gazed into the Formic's eyes. The alien's mandibles clacked feverishly. Ender spoke. "When I was a kid at home, we didn't call you Formic. We always called you buggers. I think I finally know why."
Oh, no.
The insect-like alien rubbed its many legs together and lowered his pants. "This is the least I can offer you." Ender turned and parted his cheeks, the bugger's compound eyes making contact with Ender's eye that stinks. The Formic lifted one hairy tendril and gently prodded the lad's pulsating sphincter. Without another word, the giant fly-like alien monster mounted Ender and thrust its pointy intermittent sex organ up his ass. The Formic pumped, its wings fluttering until it lifted Ender off the ground anus first. The Formic wasn't sure what to do with its other seven limbs, so it clamped a pair of pincers onto Ender's nipples and another pair onto his tiny walnut scrotum. Ender moaned in pleasure. While he delighted in having the alien meat phallus deep inside him, he broke the fourth wall. "Hey, Orson Scott Card, are you happy now, you Mormon creep with your pube goatee? You called your villains buggers and wrote a book with multiple sequences of naked boys roughhousing. Just enjoy a face full of dicks and keep your gay panic, homophobia, crackpot theory to yourself." Ender and the bugger came together with the sheer force of their simul ejaculation propelling them backwards into the cave wall. They crumpled to the floor, sweating and heaving in a sticky soup of boy and alien seed with a sprinkling of blood and feces from Ender's virginal tush. The alien looked at Ender quizzically. Ender heard a voice inside his mind asking him, "Where did you learn to do that?" Ender said, "It wouldn't be hard to make you come once. I wanted to make you come so big you could never come again." Thank you.
Yeah, great. With what I only figured out was Ender's game when I saw her reaction. Good of your final round one comic, Drennan Davis.
Woo!
Thank you, Drennan Davis.
Hi.
Woo.
I'm doing one on Garfield. This is, was I not supposed to give that away?
It was not.
Okay. I wrote this with a lot of cold medication and weed. It's gonna be in the, I'm more of a musical comedian, I don't really do storytelling, so I decided to do, like an R. Kelly version of this. Some people know what that is, great. I'm gonna set up the tone here.
Little bit of three-way, and then I saw the normal side I looked to, so I said, fuck, I
guess we're about to get freaky in this motherfucking can't box. Who's the fucking boogie? One in the butt, one in the mouth. This feels like a Chinese finger trap. Like, oh damn, and I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna come. And suddenly a dog comes into the room, and oh deep, so stupid, I tell him, the fuck out, wait. I notice he has a jaw tongue, and I think, oh, this would be fun, so I invite him. Over and I say, oh, he licked Nermal's ass, and he does. And it feels so great to Nermal to say, ooh, lick my asshole too. And then, oh, his giant tongue licks both Nermal's and my asshole at the same time. And then he goes to dog down on Pookie. Yeah, the three of us start fucking Pookie the bear. And then I notice that out the corner of my eye, John's standing there. Oh, John's standing there. What are you doing standing there? In the cat box, we know we even know it's the job was on it, and he's standing there in the corner, naked, whacking off to us. It's so hot, they've been taking on this animal orgy. And I said, no, wait, too late. I'm live streaming this on the internet, and we're gonna go make so much money off this. Cause you know, people like furries, and we're gonna make so much money off this. I said, no, you can't do this without my permission. He said, oh, yes, I can. Technically, you're both my possessions now. We were great, by the way, I invited some friends over through this fuck date. And he said, hold up, wait a minute, I got some groupies. And I said, we don't even need groupies. And then suddenly the door opens, and it's my enemy. Snooping. So I stand there with my dick and pookie, get my asshole licked by Otis. Snoop is standing there in the doorway like people looking at us like jumping, taking the shit. And then suddenly Snoopy, the fuck would you look at, player? And he's like, nothing, man. Just John invited me over and he said, you could use another fuck me. And I said, well, play. You were wrong, so you gotta escort your ass out of this bitch. And then he was like, no, Charlie Brown walks into this room with a famous circus. Now we're fucking all kinds of Christian kids and stealing kind of problems. Famous comic strips of y'all just all playing along. They all were drunk in the mix and brings the rest of the dogs from the mutts. And then Calvin brings his Tiger Hobbs and we all fuck him in the butt. And then the Sunday paper joins the team like Ron and Ziggy and the Fusco Brothers with the Wolverine. Ooh, well, I'll fuck it. Then suddenly John's whacking off in the corner and he gets a call. And this man on the other line saying, I wanna fuck you all. And then suddenly I'm watching on the internet and it's really all into these furries. Then it's like, we can make a Hollywood movie. By the way, this is Bill Murray.
To be continued. Thanks, sir. Thanks. All right, please welcome all your round one competitors back up, and we will be voting on the winner. So, first I'm just going to remind you of what everybody read, so no voting yet, and then we'll vote after that with your applause on the winner. So we started with Matt Lieb with Alexander Graham Bell, and then we had, hold on, then we had Bucky Sinister with Super Friends, Claire O'Kane with Happy Days, Nato Green with Ender's Game, and Drennan Davis with Garfield. So, with your applause, pick a favorite, starting with Matt Lieb, Alexander Graham Bell. Bucky Sinister, Super Friends. Claire O'Kane, Happy Days. Nao Green, Ender's Game. Drennan Davis, Garfield. All right, I think we got to have a runoff between Matt Lieb with Alexander Graham Bell and Drennan Davis with Garfield. So, pick a favorite, starting again with Mr. Matt Lieb, Alexander Graham Bell. Drennan Davis, Garfield. Woo! Oh, a tie. You're round one champions. Matt Lieb and Drennan Davis, ladies and gentlemen.
That does it for round one, and congratulations to Matt and Drennan. Check out round two, available now, featuring Will Weldon, Caitlin Gill, Josh Androsky, and Sean Keen. If you like what you heard today, please subscribe and rate on iTunes. It's a big help, as are positive comments. Negative comments can be directed to the podcast Terrified with Dave Ross. Upcoming live shows include February 18th at Nerd Melt in LA, March 7th at Union Hall in Brooklyn, and for more details, you can always join the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Facebook group or follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.